You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the third and final hour, everybody, of our live broadcast for this Saturday evening, May the 14th. Tonight, we have a very special treat for you, and we're going to do something new and unique during this third hour. Our very own New York correspondent, Sean Bergen, will speak with retired police officer James Lancia on the state of policing, media, race, and whatever else they want. My job this last hour is just to take these two in and out of the commercial breaks and in and out of the segments. Now, you all know Sean, former television news reporter and all-around solid guy, while James Lancia made his first appearance on the Political Cesspool just a few weeks ago. As a refresher, Mr. Lancia was only 18 years old when he was hired by the Bridgeport, Connecticut Police Department. He patrolled the most dangerous neighborhood in America during the height of the crack epidemic. He has made up to 7 felony arrests in a single week, executed search warrants with only a billy club and a six-shooter. He was known as Super Cop and even had a hit put out on him. He wrote a spectacular book that we've promoted in the past, and we'll do so again this evening, Downtown White Police, available on Amazon, and now has a series on YouTube called Cop Shootout, where he pulls no punches, and we'll have some familiar guests on real soon. So, folks, without further ado, the Political Cesspool proudly presents a conversation between Sean Bergen and James Lancia. Sean, take it away. Where do you start?
Well, thanks very much for that, James. Yeah, my exploits have been well chronicled here on the Political Cesspool, having been a crime reporter for the News 12 networks, primarily outside of New York City. And I quite often have spoken about these satellite cities that are just on the fringe of the New York metropolitan region. These cities rarely make the headlines. You rarely hear about them except when the annual FBI's crime statistics come out and you find out that per capita, they are some of the most violent, crime-ridden cities in America. I'm talking about places like Newark, New Jersey, Elizabeth, New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey, Yonkers and Mount Vernon in New York, and of course, not far from there, Bridgeport, Connecticut. And when people think about violent crime, you know, they think of Detroit, they think of Chicago, they think of Baltimore, they think of places like Camden, New Jersey. But rarely does the image of Connecticut or the state of Connecticut come to mind. But, of course, we're joined by Super Cop Jim Lancia, who wrote this great book, Downtown White Police, subtitled Demonizing the Alpha Cop, Glorifying Thugs, and Militarizing Law Enforcement. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Well, thanks for the introduction, Sean, and for the introduction you gave me too, James. Wow, that was great. I don't even need to say anything anymore. You guys summed it all up nicely for me.
We got another hour ahead of us, and I know you've got tons of you know, anecdotes and incredible experiences having been a street cop in not only in Bridgeport but in one of the most notorious housing projects in the country. Jim, just tell us a little bit about your background and how you came on the force at the tender age of 18.
Well, sure. And back in 1978, I think they tried it for a little while, where 18-year-olds, they lowered the age to 18 to become a police officer if you pass the test and did all the other requisites. I made the police department after having not too many choices in life, growing up as a poor Italian kid in a poor neighborhood, and I took whatever opportunity I was able to get. It was either the Marines or the police department, so I took the police department. Yes, and it was, like you said, those the cities in the peripheral of New York City all have their crime, and sometimes, you know, being in the shadow of the Big Apple, they don't get as much notoriety. And sometimes it's a good thing because, well, I don't know if it's a good thing, but it's just all bad news coming from this. It's like in Connecticut, like you said, Connecticut has Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven, and they're all pretty much very close in crime statistics. Bridgeport's the largest city in Connecticut, and it's less than an hour from New York City. So we have all the statistics that a larger city has, and sometimes even higher in violent crime. So like you were saying, you know, it's got all the big city crime, and it's like, and you know, it's just, it's no different than New York City, Detroit, New Orleans, you know, cities like that. But go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, you talk about all these different cities, and, you know, you were working in what was one of the most notorious housing projects in the country, Father Panic Village. And the thing right. I discovered about these housing projects is that they're all pretty much the same. I mean, they're like open-air penitentiaries where they're really good, honest, hardworking, law-abiding citizens who are just trying to get through life have to live like prisoners in their own homes, you know, with bars on their window and behind steel-reinforced doors, while these thugs are actually running the institution, and they turn these courtyards just into virtual kill zones. Now, when I worked in the news media, we were bound by the laws of political correctness. I wasn't even allowed as a reporter to refer to these places as housing projects, because I think most people are vaguely aware that they're not very good places. I was instructed that I had to call them public housing complexes, which makes it sound kind of like a condo complex, as if one day we're all going to waltz in there and stumble across the cast from Friends, sipping on lattes and eating arugula sandwiches. But yeah. These places are hellholes, and they all look and sound and, you know, kind of smell the same. You know, one of the first things I learned when I went into a housing project in Newark is that you better have a pair of really thick-soled shoes under you, because the places are just riddled with hypodermic needles. Talk to us a little bit about what housing projects are like, what this specific housing project was like, and then there was a specific point within that housing project called The Hole that was just mm-hmm. sounds like something out of Dante's Inferno.
Exactly. Well, you summed up the housing projects pretty well, and that's what they were. They were projects. Bridgeport had the distinction of having many housing projects, and they were all pretty bad, but Father Panic Village was the largest housing project in the state of Connecticut, the sixth largest in the United States, and rated number one for crime by the FBI. So it's gone now. They bulldozed it down. But when I was working there, it was in the height of the crack epidemic, and violent crime was just through the roof. And you're right. The people live like prisoners there. It's a good analogy when you compare it to a prison. Because it is a prison, because any decent people living there are stuck there. And this isn't racial. It's not about race as far as why they're there. It's cheap housing, and, you know, and they live there. And there was a lot of bad neighborhoods. But in a place like that, Father Panic, it was basically the thugs ran it when we weren't there. But, see, when we came through, we were the man. See, but that's the difference back then, tough cops. Made the difference. We kept crime contained, and they knew they really couldn't wander too far from there and be safe. And there was no place in that project that we didn't go, whether it was in the patrol car or walking right through with our nightsticks. We, you know, we were the man there. We controlled the situation.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you can hold it right there, and for the ladies and gentlemen in the audience, this segment surely has whetted your appetite for an incredibly engrossing and riveting remainder of the hour. Three more segments forthcoming with these two heavyweights, Sean Bergen and Officer James Lancia, minutes away. Stay tuned, and we'll pick it right back up.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells, but as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, James Edwards here with you. Sean Bergen guest hosting this hour, and we'll continue his interview with Officer James Lancia. Right now, they're talking about Officer Lancia's book, Downtown White Police and Issues Related to It. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, thanks, James. Yeah, Downtown White Police, just a riveting account of life on Bridgeport, Connecticut's mean streets, as told by Jim Lancia, a veritable super cop, an alpha cop, as you refer to yourself. The alpha cop, look, I grew up around a bunch of alpha cops. I grew up in a very working-class Irish-Italian neighborhood out on Long Island where, you know, it was really the best choice for a lot of young guys growing up was to end up, you know, is to go into the police force, the fire department, or the military. These were men of who wore the uniform. They were not afraid to go into harm's way, and they were not afraid to take on the meanest, baddest, thugged-out criminals out there. And you were one of those guys. You were one of those alpha cops that you say are demonized now. And I would agree with you on that, Jim. Not only are alpha cops demonized, but I think the alpha male in general is viewed today as like a brutish, thuggish guy who is out to oppress others through violence and what have you. But it was really those alpha cops that separated civilization from utter anarchy and chaos. Talk to us a little bit, if you will, Jim, about the demise of the alpha cop.
Sure. Well, when I go into the book about the alpha cop, it's basically I go into good cops, bad cops, lazy cops, and alpha cops. You know, alpha cop is just the ideal of what a cop should be, a guy that's going to do his job. He's going to risk it all to protect people. And, you know, and that's the kind of cop I was. And, you know, that's the kind of cop I was labeled as. And, you know, my career shows it. But like you said, they are demonizing alpha males, alpha cops, particularly white alpha males. And that's the reality of it all. I mean, if you look at our culture today, the mainstream is worshiping the thug. They excuse the criminal, and the law-abiding people suffer. And anything a cop does today, even when he's trying to protect the black community in these neighborhoods, he's demonized every time he does his job if he has to use some type of force. And coming from experience, you do have to use force a lot. Sometimes it's lethal. Sometimes it's non-lethal. Sometimes it's just a good old fist fight in the middle of the street. But it has to be done. And now with the influx of camera phones and everything. Everything looks bad. Now, I'm not excusing everything a cop does. There was bad cops back then, and there's bad cops today. But just like in any profession, you're going to get good and bad. But for the most part, I think cops are still doing the best they possibly can, considering the circumstances politically and socially, and they're doing as good of a job as possible. Believe me, if they weren't doing a good job, we would all see it. We would all be affected by it, even though it is, you know, it's still pretty bad. Good cops keep the lid on things. And it's the good cop, the alpha cop, that really takes the brunt of the heavy duty, just like in combat. You know, you probably got 10% of the fighting soldiers doing the real fighting, and the rest are, you know, logistical and anything else. But in a police department, it's almost the same thing. If you have 10%, 20% of the cops doing the job, it could keep, you know, a city safe and from turning into chaos. But they want to do away with it. I mean, there's a lot of nefarious things behind what's going on with police, and I can't blame everybody for not having a favorable view of cops today, you know, because it's just the way things are being led. It just looks like it's purposely being done. They want to get rid of good cops. And if you want to go into that, we can.
Well, let's, I think you're talking on a subject, which also, you've revealed yourself to be very against, and that is militarizing law enforcement. I want to get to that a little later in the discussion. Right now, when you say they are demonizing the alpha cops, who is it that you're talking about? Who is they?
Well, I would have to say everybody. The media is a huge culprit, okay? You have the social aspects, Black Lives Matter, the Black Panthers, a lot of these groups, the ADL, SBLC, you name it.
Hear, hear.
Itself. You got Hillary Clinton demonizing police. She goes in front of a crowd of Black people or liberal socialists, and she'll say, oh, the cops need to be straight, changed. They need to change their ways. Is it the cops that need to change their ways, or is it the thug culture that needs to change their violent behavior? That would make things better. But see, it's always find an excuse for the criminal. And no matter what happens, find an excuse, even up to the crazy notion of federalizing police departments. And that's what they've done. They already federalized 6 U.S. police departments. I put that in the book. I list the cities. And they want to make the whole country federalized. And that's not a good idea. It'll be just like any other alphabet agency with no you have no recourse or redress. I mean, try making a complaint against TSA or something like that. It'll be like a TSA on the street.
Yeah. You know, I, having been a member of the news media, I agree with you 100% as far as the media kind of leading this whole anti-cop mentality and this war on cops that seems to have swept the country and been legitimized by the news media. You know, Black Lives Matter would not exist if it were not for a news media that pushed an abject lie that we saw in Ferguson, Missouri, just about a year and a half ago. And in Ferguson, Missouri, you had a cop who was just doing his job, who had the courage to tell Mike Brown to get off the street, to actually track him down. He got a call that Brown was a robbery suspect. And look, you know, you talk about do-nothing cops, and then you talk about alpha cops. The alpha cop is the guy who stops a guy like Mike Brown and you know, starts investigating him as a perp, where there's a lot of cops out there that might just drive right past the guy because they're afraid
That's right.
of the circumstances. They're afraid of the ramifications. They're afraid of what – I mean, look at Darren Wilson's life. That officer was out there doing his job as he should have been, and his life has been virtually turned upside down by a liberal news media who is contemptuous of men in uniform. There is no question. I was in the news media for 10 years. I sat in on those editorial meetings, those planning meetings. I know how those decisions are made. I saw how the sausage was made. And it was so sickening to listen to these basically gray-haired hippies, a bunch of liberals, ideologues who masquerade as journalists, constantly with their finger pointed at the cops. They view the police as a nameless, faceless mob of brutish thugs who are racist at to the core and out to oppress minorities and communities through a combination of violence and destruction. That's the narrative that's being spun by the liberal media. And they are not only is it the liberal media, but we see it in academia and in the political realm, where it begins right at the top with guys like Barack Obama and his attorney generals, Eric Holder, and now Loretta Lynch. And it looks like Hillary Clinton is now towing that liberal socialist line. Because the problem here at its core, is that they have to blame the police for the problems that exist in these crime-ridden neighborhoods because they cannot bring themselves to shine a light on the abject failure that is modern liberalism. Everywhere you go in this country and you see housing projects, which is a liberal idea, and you see inner cities that have been turned into combat zones, it begins with black families that have been utterly destroyed by liberal policies. And unless you're on the front lines and you are nose to nose with this on a daily basis, most people don't know about it. They never hear about it because they're not going to hear about it in the military. What was your experience in that regard as a cop?
Well, you summed up a lot of it. But here's the thing, like you said, to a cop like Darren Wilson. First of all, in my book, I also talk about the glorifying of thugs. I mean, you turn guys like Mike Brown into a hero, and you make memorials to him. When you look at the film, he strong-armed his way in that store, and he broke the law. And a good cop like Darren Wilson gets fired or had to leave the job because he had to protect himself because he tried to make this guy pay for a crime. So now we glorify a criminal. We get rid of a good cop. And the media, like you said, a lot of members of the media, there are, you know, guys like you, you know, you spoke out, but most of the media is just complicit. They aid and abet all of this thug worship that's going on, and it's making the streets more and more dangerous. But
Jim, hold up right there, my friend, if you could, just 1 second. We have to take another brief pause. In 3 minutes, we'll be back to continue this with Sean Bergen and Officer James Lancia. Riveting radio. I'm thoroughly enjoying this as a fan tonight. We'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Listen, do you hear that sound? It started low, but it's getting progressively louder. Into a crescendo, even louder. Irresistible, ending in an ear-splitting blast of mass disruption. That's the sound of America's economic and political systems crashing to the ground. But we have a plan. We will be ready to restore political sanity. We will be ready to answer the call of productive America. We will restore America's industrial base and put America back to work. We will shut down political correctness and restore decency and positive media to America. We will save our Constitution, our traditional way of life, our customs, and religion. We will restore sound money and crush the debt-based system of monetary slavery. And we will end America's foreign misadventures. We are the American Freedom Party, and we have a plan. Learn more about us, theamericanfreedomparty.us.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I made mention of it in passing just before the last break. I want to give a tip of the hat to Scoop. Scoop came to me. He forfeited his own segment tonight to help make time for this particular hour. And Scoop came to me a couple of weeks ago. He said, I got an idea. Let's have Sean interview James Lancia for an hour. And he pitched it to me. And, well, the result, I think, speaks for itself. You know, it may be my show, but I am listening to it as a fan like everyone else tonight. And can't wait for these guys to get back to it. Sean doing a fantastic job with fantastic content and a great guest. Sean, back to you.
Well, thanks very much for that, James. And, yes, our guest tonight is Jim Lancia, a former Bridgeport police officer who is has recently written a published a book called Downtown White Police, Demonizing the Alpha Cop, Glorifying Thugs, and Militarizing Law Enforcement. And, Jim, when we left off just before the commercial break, we were talking about the media's role in glamorizing thugs and demonizing alpha cops. The liberal media, in my experience, is driven in large part by political correctness. This political correctness, of course, comes from the American left. We never see that coming from conservatives. It is always leftists in this country who want to squelch the free speech of others. You dedicate a large part of your book to the problem of political correctness, especially as it concerns the news media and the reporting of crime. The news media, in my experience, has been guilty, I think, of downplaying black-on-black crime. But what goes virtually unrecorded is the problem or the epidemic of black-on-white crime. Some of the statistics here are absolutely staggering. You talk about the fact that it's a white person is 130 times more likely to be robbed by a black person than the other way around. Talk a little bit about your experience here, and your, you know, just how outspoken you've been on what is really just a politically off limits conversation.
Yeah, it's the fact that they want to squelch the truth that makes me want to come out. See, I've seen the worst of it. But like you were talking about the black on white crime, the media would have you think that it's the exact opposite. But more than 90% of all interracial crime in the United States is committed by blacks on whites. So that's pretty serious. Okay, so it's not the white man attacking the black man. It's the black man attacking the white man and the white woman. The rape statistics in the U.S. are astounding. If there's an average of 30 to 40,000 reported rapes and or sexual assaults on white women by black males every year in the United States. And it's at 0% for white males on black females. I mean, the numbers are so low that they statistically rate it at 0%. So that's never talked about in the mainstream media. Yet the only time you ever see anything about a high-profile rape would be the Al Sharpton-Tawana Brawley fiasco that turned out to be a lie, and the Duke lacrosse team. So the only time they ever talk about rape and make it mainstream and talk about it is when there's white people involved. And it's not that white people don't rape, but they very rarely interracial rape. So this is all about the interracial. This is racism, if there's a word, if you can say racism, it's on the parts of blacks. I mean, I've never seen anybody so more racist than blacks. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. Everything was about race. They use race to get away with things. They use race to advance themselves. And I'm not talking about every black, but honest to God, I mean, it seems like it when you work in a place like I did. And getting back to a good cop like Darren Wilson doing his job, it's very easy not to do your job and still collect your paycheck, stay out of trouble, and, you know, do 30 years on the job. Very easy for cops to do nothing. I talk about the do-nothings in my job, on my book. And that's the problem. If you have a whole police force filled with do-nothing, then all the cops are going to do is write reports after the damage is done. You need guys that get there before the damage is done. So, you know, that's the problem. And they are purging our police departments of good working cops. And just like you said before, Sean, any cop that speaks out on the truth who's actively working risks termination or some other type of punishment. So a lot of cops can't come out. So it looks like they're complicit in this, you know, cover-up, which they're not. Most cops are just decent working people that want to do good. It's just that they can't. I mean, they're not allowed to anymore. Look at the Laquan McDonald, Officer Van Dyke case in Chicago. I did a video on that. They indicted this guy for first-degree murder. It's ridiculous. It's incredible. I mean, for a cop doing his job, he shoots somebody armed with a knife and on high on PCP, committing other crimes, and all of a sudden the whole world is against this cop who's willing to risk everything to try and stop these people. And this happens all the time.
And also how that's portrayed in the media, because the Laquan case that you're talking about, just to give our listeners a little background, you know, this Laquan McDonald was high on PCP, which gives these guys superhuman strength and the most unpredictable behavior out there. He was armed with a knife, and when you see the little bit of surveillance tape that the media played over and over and over and over again, they don't show the buildup. They don't show that what this guy's mental state was in. There's no audio on that tape. All they see is a cop shooting a guy who doesn't even look like he's really armed. Anybody who was on the scene and on the ground right there would call that a justified shooting, and instead, this guy's now facing first-degree murder charges, as we're seeing now play out in the city of Baltimore, where you have a Freddie Gray, who was a career criminal. Some people say he was a narcotics snitch who was in the back of a police van who, you know, tried to injure himself, is what it looks like, so he could sue the city of Baltimore and cash in with this jackpot justice that we have today with these civil rights lawyers. Oh, that's how they build themselves. But these are not also guys who've carved out a career for themselves in the race business and the civil rights industry. And all of these things that you're talking about all plays into that, because ultimately it's the taxpayer who pays the price, and it's the taxpayer who pays the price with unsafe neighborhoods. And we're seeing departments purged of guys who have the courage to go out there and really do their job the way it was meant to be. And now they're demonized to the point where they can't do their job. Now, let me ask you something, Jim. What do you think about, this mayor in New York City, Blasio, has taken a lot of heat because he put a stop to what's known as broken windows policing and the tactic known, the very highly effective tactic known as stop, question, and frisk. What do you think about this, hug a thug mentality that we get from the American left?
It's a disaster. And it's already starting to rear its ugly head. Let's take New York City, for instance. It was cleaned up by Mayor Giuliani. Okay, he did all those quality of life arrests. He cleaned up the streets. He cleaned up 42nd Street. I mean, they basically changed New York City into a place you can go to again and actually feel safe in Manhattan in most neighborhoods. But since Bloomberg and de Blasio, they came in, and now they want to, like you said, hug a thug. The only people that are benefiting from that is the thug. That's it. So if you want to make thugs happy in this country, well, I guess they're doing it. But those policies, I talked to New York City cops. They're telling me now that it's going back to the pre-Giuliani days during Dinkins, when you had wilding going on where you're just chasing people through the park and beating the crap out of them. And the crime statistics were way higher, you know. And it's going back to that. And the stop and frisk worked. It's the stop and frisk is used on thugs, period. Okay? And it's not something that's supposed to be evenly distributed out by race. You can't just say, okay, well, we went up to three thugs today, now we gotta go up to three white people. First of all, that would be wrong. Because it's not that you don't go up to white people, but if you had white people hanging on the corners in New York City like the blacks do, like the thugs do, you'd go up and you'd search them too, but they're just not there. So you're not going to pick three Wall Street businessmen, even though some of those guys are criminals too, but you're not going to go up to them and frisk them for weapons dealing drugs on a corner. These frisks, stop and frisks, actually keep gun violence down, because a lot of thugs, once they know cops are going to do that, they're less likely to carry weapons on them because they know they're going to be randomly searched. So it does keep the violence down. I mean, I have firsthand experience with that on the tactical team in Bridgeport. You know, we went out there and we started doing the stop and frisk, you know, really stepped it up, and gun violence went down just almost immediately. So it works, you know.
Yeah, and, it works. And it also works for black people who are law-abiding, who have to live in the vicinity of these thugs and have to live in these areas. Because when you eliminate a program like stop and frisk, it's minority people who suffer. It's not the white folks on the Upper East Side who are paying the price for this. It's the guy who's living in Bushwick who's trying to raise his family. It's the guy who's trying to get his kids through school in the Bronx, what have you. Now, look, Jim, throughout this conversation, we've been talking about the Alpha Cop, the necessary for tough, aggressive policing. But, you know, my conversations with you prior to this, we talked about the necessary, the necessity of balanced policing. You guys are one part tough guy, but you're also one part skillful diplomat, and you know that when you need to shoot, but you, more importantly, you also know when not to shoot and just how much force needs to be applied. But there is a very troubling trend, and maybe we can discuss this on the other side of the commercial break, with the militarizing of law enforcement departments that you are dead against.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com. Or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821. Or visit PureEffectFilters.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor, strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him. And believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, one last fleeting segment between Sean Bergen and Jim Lancia. It has gone by fast. Hard to believe that this started 45 minutes ago and that we only have a few minutes left. But let's get to it, and I can tell you, we will be hearing a lot more. Well, of course, Sean's with us pretty regularly, but I want to hear a lot more from these two and a lot more interviews from Sean going forward as well. Sean, your final segment.
Well, thanks very much for that, James. You know, in our conversations earlier and reading the book, Jim, you are clearly a proponent of tough, aggressive policing, but it's balanced policing. You have to be one part tough guy, one part skillful diplomat. And you have to know when to shoot, but more importantly, you have to know when not to shoot. Now, you have been a very outspoken critic of militarizing law enforcement, and that's not something we hear a lot from the police. But you see this as a troubling trend, and moving forward, you think it does not bode well for our republic. If you could just kind of touch on that for a moment.
Okay, right. And I'll start off with saying you're right. As far as being a tough cop, it doesn't mean you're a brute. It doesn't mean you're violent. It just means you apply the right amount of force for the situation. Now, I've been in every situation an inner city cop could be in as far as danger goes. I've been in lethal force situations, non-lethal force situations, and many other situations, thousands where you have to use force of some type. But I've also been in countless times where my gun was drawn, had the legal right to take a life, but didn't. And there were other cops also that, you know, were in many of those situations. But I can speak for myself. I've been in so many of those situations where a life could have been taken perfectly legally, but I didn't do it because I had the confidence and I had the training and I had the experience that said, this guy wants to live. I mean, some of them were split-second decisions where if they didn't drop that knife, if they didn't drop that gun when they did, they would be dead. But they dropped it. So you give that extra, you know, that extra second if you can. But it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes if you wait too long, you end up dead yourself. So it's never, there's never one scenario that paints itself to be the same. That's why it's so difficult to judge a cop in the field when he has to use force. So I try not to judge too much my inner city brothers when they use force in the field. But some situations are just outright ridiculous. As far as militarizing police, well, some would say, well, you're a tough cop. Why aren't you for militarizing? Well, because I've done a lot of raids with the FBI, DEA, ATF, statewide narcotics, other interdepartmental agencies. So I got as much experience doing high-profile felony drug raids as anybody does. That's what I did. I did that a lot. They called me off the street even when I was in the patrol division. The FBI called me off the street. They liked the way I knocked doors in. So I could speak for this. Now, that doesn't mean I don't believe cops should be tough, but the problem with militarizing police is that they're using it for, okay, let's put it this way. They use SWAT about 100,000 times a year. Okay, that's militarized police, SWAT. 93% of those times are for non-gun calls. 7% is for, like, a barricaded suspect or someone with a gun or a dangerous felony. The other 93% are for warrant service, search warrants, and even eviction. So they're using these for non-felonies or not a dangerous situation. And they can actually heighten the danger by using this overwhelming force. It's not that you go in there half-assed, but the thing is you don't need an army to go in for a warrant service. I mean, we did that too. Sometimes just two patrolmen would go to a door to serve a warrant. I mean, I've done this in real life, and things aren't any different today than they were then. In fact, statistically, it's less dangerous than it was then. That's not saying it's not dangerous now, but statistically, cops were being killed more back then, and the murder rates were much higher everywhere across the board. So there's no fundamental reason to turn our police forces into an army, and I think it's just being done for other reasons anyway. And these are the guys that are going to be doing these illegal gun grabs if the emperor decides to make it an executive order. So who do you think is going to be doing all those gun grabbings? It's militarized policing, and they want people to get used to the fact that cops are going to be militarized. I say, always say this, if you're going to militarize or use them somewhere, use them on the border to protect us from these illegal criminals coming in with all the drugs. Send them Amen. To jihadist camps all over the country that these Muslims have, you know, but they won't use them for those situations.
Yeah, put them in the south side of Chicago where you have a virtual
exactly.
war zone, you know, going on in effect. But, you know, it sounds to me like you think the American population is kind of conditioned into getting used to this, growing accustomed to this, so that if dear leader Barack Obama decides that he wants to maybe cancel the elections, impose martial law, or God forbid, she ended up leading the UN with Hillary Clinton in office. We could see. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of. It sounds conspiracy theory, but this looks like it could very well be within reach. Like we're being set up for this.
Yeah, well, it's really not a conspiracy theory. But here's a funny thing too. They had this sheriff on a YouTube video once, and he was explaining why he had this MRAP, you know, these virtual tanks on American streets. And the reporter asked him, "So why do you have these?" He goes, "Oh, well, these are for constitutionalists and certain gun owners who may have caches of guns." So instead of saying they would go after criminals, he's talking about constitutionalists. I mean, aren't law-abiding citizens constitutionalists? Aren't cops supposed to be constitutionalists? But so you see the rhetoric that even cops are using today? That's what they want to go after instead of the thugs on the south side of Chicago. Did you see the increase in violence in Chicago this year? It's record high for January.
It's up 70-80% across the board.
Right. And that's the direct result of cops not wanting to do their job anymore because of deep policing, because they're taking away the street cops' ability to combat this, and the result is high crime and violence. And like I said, the thugs win. But that's what I think they're doing. They're conditioning us. Now, it's obvious. I mean, look at the Strong Cities Network, signed last year by Loretta Lynch. It allows UN troops to be used in the United States for certain situations that the president deems necessary. So what do you think that could be used for? These are bills that were signed into law. So it's not a conspiracy. These are actual laws. And if someone thinks that they go through the trouble to sign a bill that allows the UN troops to patrol American streets for no reason, then, you know, we're living in a fantasy world.
Yeah, well, these are the types of bills that are being passed in the dark of the night while the president and our liberal media have the nation focused on things like transgendered bathrooms that apply to 0.03% of the population and create that kind of upheaval in communities where it's not even an issue. Look, this guy Obama has demonstrated himself to be a master of deception, and some people would say that is evil or even demonically inspired. I guess we'll have to see and how this is going to play out. But, you know, it does not bode well for our republic. I think when you see how the police could be used and abused in this way, you have a federal government that's supplying them with this militarized equipment, and then coming back with their friends in the media and demonizing them for doing something that was done by the federal government anyway. Again, they make the man on the street, the uniform guy, the bad guy. They make white people the bad guy in a lot of situations because they have the temerity to actually speak up and point at the problem of black-on-white crime. And it all looks very nefarious. And you're talking to a guy who's a proud member of the Oath Keepers, as is the leader of this Liberty News Network, Sam Bushman. How would you advise American citizens going forward, Jim? Because I think that there is a general unease in this country that things are headed kind of in a diabolical direction. We have a lot of you talk about the gun grabs, the unconstitutional gun grabs. We hear about the assault on Second Amendment rights. How would you advise people, and where do you see this all going?
All right. Well, I've never seen the country this polarized in my life. I have never seen it this bad. And I want this election to go through. I want Trump to get in. I don't like to be political, but I could see Trump is the only guy that can bring this country back to some sanity if we have an election. You know, I just want to let the audience know that under FEMA, legally, the president, you know, under any emergency circumstance can suspend the elections that we're all looking forward to. Okay, he can suspend the elections just on any whim that he feels he can do it on. Now, is he going to do it? I hope not. Is he the type of guy that would do it? Well, I'll leave that to everybody else to answer. He can suspend them and create martial law until he feels there should be an election. That's legal under FEMA. That is law. And with all the executive orders he's signed circumventing Congress and our legal process and the Constitution, I don't put anything past him.
Jim, hold it right there. We are out of time, but I'll tell you what. Next time I'm out of town, you guys get the whole show. I want you to go to Amazon.com, folks, and buy Downtown White Police. We will be hearing a lot more from Jim Lanzia in the coming weeks and months, we hope. And a huge round of applause to Sean Bergen, a pro's pro, for an incredible interview tonight. Gentlemen, we love you. Thank you so much for all you do. And with that being said, folks, we'll take our show on the road and be broadcasting live from Nashville next week. Stay tuned to the website for more information about that particular out-of-studio program. For the rest of the staff and crew, and again to Scoop Stanton for setting this thing up tonight between Sean and Jim, I'm James Edwards. God bless you and good night.